Hey guys, I'm Nick Bester. I'm joined here by Ran to Japan, a guy whose training just absolutely fascinates me. I mean, you know, one of the first things I do is I go on Strava, and I think this week he's going to have a down week. And he just keeps on delivering week in, week out. And it's incredible. Jake, I caught up with you a while back. We've both got Valencia Marathon in 5 weeks. Let's go. But yeah, it's awesome to see how you're just coming in leaps and bounds. And I'm keen to unlock some of that goodness today. I know we've both been on podcasts where they ask you the usual questions like, how did you get into running and all that? Yeah. We're going to skip that stuff. We're going to get straight into the nitty gritty. I'll probably ask you a couple of questions that you're not used to getting asked. But yeah, since we last caught up, you are now a Brooks sponsored athlete. It's been awesome to see that, you know, brands are valuing not just the performance side, but the content creation, you know, the reach and sort of influence you have over the running community. How's it been being a sponsored athlete?
Yeah, man, nice quality. It's I kind of thought, to be honest, I'd blown it last time with Tokyo Marathon. I wanted so much more, and I felt like I had that sort of 210 in me or like potentially, yeah, on a sort of perfect day. So when I came out with 214, I was pretty gutted actually at the time, because I thought, yeah, I'm not going to get sponsored now, looking at the level you've got to be for like a lot of pros. But luckily, Brooks were like, they valued the social media, which I think, yeah, a lot of brands sort of miss, or they don't. I think they sort of miss the value of how much exposure you're getting. Like every week, yeah, nearly 100,000 people seeing your brand. There's got to be something to that. And yeah, Brooks, fair play. Yeah, they took the gamble. So it's been quality. Very cool. That's always been the dream. And yeah, I mean, you're the same. I saw you recently renewed with Adidas, so you got your shoe wall behind. Very cool.
The collection. Yeah, no, it's really cool. And I think you nailed it in one of your videos where you said, you know, like elite athletes are getting sponsored, and fair enough, at, you know, they deserve it. They're performing on high levels, but they might have less influence over, you know, a lot of the running community only know who, or like very few of them might know the people in the top 10 of a marathon major, whereas people, you know, active on social media and stuff that are good performing runners, you know, might have a lot more reach and stuff. So yeah, that's awesome and massive congratulations. I think, yeah, it was a matter of time, and who knows what the future holds for you. But just keep doing what you're doing. So I've been running for a while now, for 12 years. And at the moment I'm averaging, like this week I did 170K a week. So I'm doing about 100 miles a week, you know, which is solid. For you, that's like a super, super taper week. But I've actually been very tempted, and tell me if you think this is a good idea or not. You obviously shouldn't compare yourself to others, but with Strava, and you know, it's only natural to look at what others are doing and stuff like that. I've been very tempted to put in a week of your training, so a 280K week. Do you think it's a good idea, or is it a not so good idea? And what would your sort of best tips and advice if I take this challenge on? I was actually going to do it in this Valencia marathon block, but I thought I'm onto something good. Let me not mess with things. But in my Tokyo marathon block, I might embrace it. So yeah, what's your thoughts on that?
It's a brave idea. I like it. It's a train harder, not smarter idea for sure. I'd say, I don't know. I mean, to be fair, every time I've bumped my mileage up, I've thought like, this is going to be impossible. I'm like, there's no way I could go any higher. Because the first time even like I hit a 200K week, I'm like, everything hurt. I'm exhausted. Like I can barely do sessions. But then weirdly, a couple weeks later, it's like, oh, my body's adapted. And the same happened with like 250K. Same happened with 280. And so I think it is just one of those things, you can build it and eventually you get used to it. I don't know, to maybe just pop out with a sudden 280. I'd save it till post Valencia maybe. But I think, okay, I mean, so yeah, you've really got a solid base.
So from 170 to sort of like 210 to 240 to 280. The problem is that, oh man, you know what? I struggle to, if I get over like 180Ks a week, yeah. I think like, and this is me personally, I feel like sometimes it might be a bit forced. You know, if you're not getting those little things right, like all the nutrition, sleep, recovery in between, then like a part of me almost like stops enjoying it as much. And I'm kind of like, you know, what's your real reason for running type thing. But I feel like if I just go from 180 to 280 as a once off week, like, you know, then I'll really cancel my work schedule, kind of lock in on training and go with that. But, and this was actually one of my questions later on. So when you're doing 280K weeks, obviously you keep stressing the body, and the human body's amazing and it adapts, right? But what I want to know is, from a motivational point of view, like I said, when I touch base on 200K weeks, which I have in the past, mentally I really start struggling. Do you ever get days, because you're averaging 40Ks a week, like, do you get days where you're like, today I just don't feel like it, but I can't because, you know, it's my training, I've got this reputation to uphold, so on and so forth? Or is it kind of like, do you just never struggle?
Oh, I'd say there's definitely times when I'm like, maybe for an afternoon run, or let's say I've got a triple, okay, I've done two runs, like, I've got another one to go. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this is long getting out the door. But I don't know, I think it's so built into my routine. It's almost like I'm not thinking in a way, it's just, I write my own training, I have my week laid out. It's almost like work, like you can't just not go to work. And so it's really, it's somehow just like built in where I read my training diary each day. It's like, okay, I've got this in the morning. It doesn't really process that, oh, I don't want to do it. And I do love running, so it doesn't seem like a chore. It doesn't feel like a job. So to me, it's like always fun, usually getting out. Like maybe the first couple of steps, like, yeah, you saw you're banged up, could be tough, but usually once you're going, then it's like, I'm glad I got out.
I find, you know what, for me, it's often like the day after a big session when I'm fitting in like an easy 7K or an easy 8K and your body's tired. And that's when I'm like, wow, this is like, I don't feel like this. But sometimes when you're in that flow, like yesterday, I did a 30K steady run. I got into such a zen zone and a nice flow that it was kind of like just went by so quickly, which was awesome. So often it's those sneaky little runs that you don't think are going to get you. And those are the ones that just smash your motivation. But yeah, then you get back on it, you think about goals and, you know, it's a big part of your job and stuff, which is great. You've shown clear in your videos, you're refueling and you fuel a lot. And thanks for sharing that. When you're getting out for triples and stuff like that, are you sort of taking, because we know sleep is the number one form of recovery. Yeah. And if you're getting good sleep, you're recovering quite well. You're obviously sleeping pretty well at night or you wouldn't be able to do what you're doing. Are you taking naps during the day, after sessions, or what does that sort of look like?
So I've literally not taken a nap in about 10 years. I think the last time I took a nap, I felt so bad afterwards. I don't know if I slept for too long or what, but I just don't think they're for me. And I think as well, I've always got stuff going on. Like, because it's kind of when I'm not running, I'm working on YouTube stuff. Like, I put a lot of work into each week's video. So I kind of feel like I'm wasting time. Like, I get my sleep at night, get my 8 hours, and then it's like, okay, I'm awake, I'm energized. I want to kind of grind stuff out rather than, yeah, nap. And I don't know, yeah, I feel like it doesn't really help me.
So you've always been sort of, you know, under the training philosophy, like train harder, not smarter. It's working well. Yeah. And I think it's making a whole lot of people train harder as well. Do you ever get like medical advice from people to say like what you're doing, it's not sustainable? And do you take it seriously or are you like, do you not know my body's adapted and I actually, you know, it's become the norm for me? Or do you think actually, you know, in 15, 20 years time, I could seriously pay for this, but who cares? Because I'm loving it so much right now and it's working well. Like, do you think it's sustainable actually? Or like, what's your thinking behind that?
Oh, I think I never think really, much. I don't look forward. And to be honest, I don't care. Like obviously it's stupid. Maybe I'd regret it in like 20 years time. But if it's like, okay, I can give absolutely everything now, have a shot at making the Olympics, running for GB. I don't care if I can, like, struggling to walk when I'm 50. Right now, it's like, that's what I want to do. That's what I would love doing. So I know I'd regret it if I didn't give everything. And like people say about, oh, running's bad for your knees, it's bad for whatever, this and that. Like runners, ex-runners are the healthiest people ever. Like you see old people, they're still bouncing around. They've got all this energy. It's like a sedentary lifestyle that kills you. That's what causes damage. So I reckon, I think we're going to be doing all right when we're, yeah, old men.
I always think, because it obviously takes so much out of you, not so much, like physically obviously, but mentally it takes a lot out. So I'm kind of like, okay, two more peak years, you know, I'm 35, I'm 36 in December. So I'm, you know, I've got into the V35 masters category, but I'm kind of like, okay, two more peak years and then I can take my foot off the accelerator. But I think I've been saying that for the last sort of like 5 or 6 years. And then you get into like age grade rating stuff. So it's just sucks you in. I don't think there's any way out. But I think that's why you're achieving what you do, because you've got such a stubborn mindset that you actually don't care if, you know, people are giving you advice that could be detrimental to you later on. It's kind of like, here and now that counts. And I mean, with research recently, it's shown that runners with bad knees, that's a myth, right? Like runners actually have better knees than non-runners. So I think from that point of view, it's fine. Look, I don't know how sustainable 280K weeks are forever. And I think deep down inside, you probably know that as well. But I think the way you answer that with a triple day or a long run, it's pretty cool to watch. And it works really well for you. But here's another question for you. So if I said to you, like, you'd have to do 120K weeks, because I actually chatted to Adam Lipschitz, a South African. He's a runner, 208 marathon. He averages about 100 Ks a week. And it's not like he's doing undercover training and stuff like that. So he's the exact opposite of you. That's extremely low for someone at his level. Mm-hmm. He said he does about 30 Ks worth of cross training or so. So let's call it like 130 K weeks, which is tiny. But if I said to you, you can only do 100 K weeks, but you'd have to do like cross training and it would be more beneficial for you. Is that something that you've thought of? Is it something you'd want to embrace? Or is it like, no, you just love running and you're not a fan of cross training at all?
Yeah, I think I just hate it. I think I associate cross training with injuries because I've had, like, when I was younger, some pretty bad, like, I've had spells of like years where I couldn't run. I've had, even before coming to Japan, I had 9 months where I was sat on an indoor exercise bike for like 4 hours a day, every single day for 9 months. And just since then, I think I went so hard on it that it's like, I'm so traumatized from the experience. I hated it so much. I'm like, I'll never ever go back to cross training unless I'm injured. Like, it's just running all the way now.
Okay, okay. You know, and what about treadmill running? Does that count as injury cross training for you, or is that still a form of running?
Ah, that doesn't count as running. If it's not outdoor, if a machine's doing it for you, you can't be going on the treadmill. It's cheating.
Can I tell you, so, okay, I'm obviously a little bit older than you, and like, I feel like from a performance level, I can still peak, but I need to be smarter about the way I go about things because, you know, my Achilles is a little bit more sore. My body's a little bit achier. I sort of take a bit longer to recover. Look, at 35, you're still young, but I'm kind of like, I can feel a difference between 35 and 30. So what I've been doing, I got a coach recently and he wants me running on 5 different surfaces. So like on trail, on road, on treadmill, on track and stuff like that. So I can see the benefits because it's different, like neurological, you know, your body's adapting. But I must say, so I've incorporated like a treadmill run once a week. I need to do a weighted gym session and it kind of gets my butt in the gym as well. But it's quite cool from the point of view that I can watch Stephen Bartlett podcasts or I can catch up on YouTube videos while you're exercising. Whereas, you know, if you're out in the run, often you want to switch off. You don't want to listen to like running podcasts all the time, or you can't watch YouTube and stuff like that. So that's one benefit. And the other benefit, and I'm not trying to convince you to do it, is that the impact is so much less on you that like you definitely recover a whole lot quicker. So when you get to sort of, you know, my age and your Achilles is aching a little bit more, I know you said your calves are a bit sore and I've got, I think, a similar calf machine to what you got. You might find that that softer treadmill might help a little bit. Okay, so let's talk about Valencia Marathon. So 5 weeks to go. You obviously on an absolute mission to break 210 in the marathon. And it's been very cool watching your journey. I'm definitely backing you. And now you've come out and said you run around 209.30 because that's the British standard. You've been training in a very hot and humid, and whenever I look at your videos, I'm like, I wish I could send you some cooler air from the UK, your side, because the air is cooler now and it's ideal for running. So you're achieving, like, you're not hitting the numbers you need to in the build because of the temperature. But if you take that relative, you're probably, you know, there and thereabouts. How are you feeling for the 209.30 in Valencia? And is that still the goal?
Yeah, so it was so hard until pretty much 2 weeks ago, I'd say, the temperature finally dropped. So I've finally been bringing out the jacket, the tights, like the long sleeves. It's maybe down to like 15 degrees, which compared to what it has been, it feels like icy. So it's crazy the difference. Like just last weekend, I had that sort of training marathon. So I ran 217 and that was like at sort of 220 pace till 30K. And then just picked up at the end of a sort of 280K week. It's like that gave a lot of confidence knowing that I can sort of knock that out. Because until then, it's so hard. You're hitting the times and stuff. And especially my shorter reps are good, like way quicker than they've ever been. Like your classic 1K reps on the track or that sort of speed stuff. I'm like, comparing to Tokyo Marathon early in the year, it's like a whole different level now. But then I try and do a tempo or something when it's 25 degrees and you're just dying, the heart rate's through the roof. But now I think we'll see. I mean, it's still that target's the 209, it's still just ridiculously quick. Like it's 304 pace per K, which is, it's never going to feel comfy. Like it's still an outrageous goal, but yeah, I think it's not completely out of the realms of possibility. So like, I feel like I might as well shoot for that. And it's, we'll see how the next couple of weeks go, but it's, things are starting to definitely trend in that right direction.
Okay. So if I gave you a 2:10 and 1 second right now at Valencia Marathon, would you take it?
No, I'd be absolutely gutted. that would hurt so much. Almost, I mean, I'd rather blow up completely. It would, but it's just to be that close, that magical barrier. It was like when you broke 2:20. It's like there's just that barrier is just, it's elusive, but once you get it.
I mean, that would still be an incredible run. But yeah, you know what? When I ran 2:20 in 8 seconds, that was such a bittersweet feeling because it was a nice PB. It was a 51 second PB. But it was like, are you joking? Like, is this some sort of sick joke? You run 42 Ks and I've been manifesting this for years and you just see that clock tick in front of you. But let's encourage positive vibes. You'll take a 2:09:59, I'm sure.
Yeah. Sub 2:10, I'd be buzzing. You're absolutely buzzing.
Cool. And honestly, if there's one place to do it, it's Valencia Marathon. We know how absolutely stacked it is. I've got an elite entry or a sub-elite entry for Valencia, which is awesome. But I actually don't have a drinks table there. I've got a sub-elite entry for Tokyo Marathon, and I've got drinks at Tokyo, which is great. And I'm hoping for a cool day at Tokyo. I'm not surprised that I don't have a drinks table with a 2:19:45 because Valencia is so stacked that actually isn't fast enough. Yeah. And if they had to give drinks to people up to sort of my level, there probably need to be a lot of tables. Do you have a drinks table en route? And is your plan to sort of just tuck into a massive group that's going at that pace and just hang in for as long as you can?
So I'm in the same position as you. I'm sub elite. I think you've got to run about 2:08 to be able to get drink bottles and elite. It's absolutely ridiculous. Pretty much you've got to run the Olympic standard just to go elite at Valencia. So I'm thinking about, I don't know whether I just carry a bunch of gels and rely on the cups or whatever. It's not ideal, but I mean, I guess the other people in my group, I'll hopefully just tuck in a massive pack. I reckon there'll be a bunch of guys going for that European standards at 2:09:30. And yeah, I guess just hope there's a whole squad there. Maybe someone will be passing drinks around. We'll sort of play it by ear, see what happens.
Maybe some elites in front would have left their bottles and you can just grab a random East African bottle. You don't know what's in it and fly. But no, actually, I was thinking it on the flip side because like if you look at races, and I mean, you've been in a lot of marathons now, drinks stations can get chaotic. Like people can do erratic things, especially if your bottle's there. They, you know, run across people. You're going to be in a massive group at 2:09:30 going for the standard. So it's actually not necessarily a bad thing to keep, you know, a couple of gels on you. I know there's Powerade en route or there'll be I don't know if it's Powerade, but there's definitely like, you know, a carb drink mix or sports drink en route. So it seemed like a bad thing at the time, but actually, to be honest, it's not the end of the world. And it might just, it takes your mind off drinks tables as well. So you can just focus on yourself.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Actually, I practiced it this marathon on the weekend. So I just had gels in my pocket, 6 gels, and grabbed a few of the paper cups. And I felt no different to when I've had bottles before. And as well, yeah, it's like what you mean where almost when you've got bottles, it's like every 5K you're starting to worry. It's like, okay, I've got to get in a good position. I've got to start drifting over. I need some room. Whereas this, it's like I'm just running the shortest line every time. I'm cutting straight through. It's like I can have it whenever I want. So almost, yeah, I felt more chill about it maybe.
Nice. We're both the type of runners. Look, we're both bigger than the people we compete against. I think you're sort of like 65 at the moment. I'm 75. So yeah, you're probably at least, you know, a solid 10 kgs heavier. I'm 15 to 20 kgs heavier than a lot of the people I compete against. It's like a unit. Like I've got like that wind velocity factor. A lot of people, you know, just tuck in and get sucked behind. Valencia Marathon, you know, I've run it before and the conditions there are obviously pretty good for most people. For us, we prefer cooler. So I think it's around like 15 degrees Celsius or so. We prefer like between 0 to 5. It's not going to be that cold. So over the course of the next month, I'm going to get myself into the sauna here, which is, you know, 3Ks away. It's a mission, but I've got a sauna suit, which, you know, is this hot suit. It's pretty gross, but you get warm and you sweat it out a bit to acclimatize for the heat factor. You've obviously been training in a very hot and humid Tokyo, but temperatures are going to drop drastically in the build-up to Valencia. Are you sort of planning to, you know, incorporate some sort of heat training still? Or do you feel like you've banked enough heat training and you're just going to, if it's 15, it'll be fine?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think because summer was so unbearable, so grim, it's like the thought of actively seeking out heat now is just like, oh, it's the last thing on earth I want to do. I'm just loving this cold weather. But actually, I was chatting to my mate yesterday, he lives in Tokyo, and he's been going to the sauna like a couple of times every week just to keep up that heat training. And I probably should. I should start thinking about it because, yeah, it's going to very quickly, it will drop suddenly here and it will be down to the sort of 10, 5 degrees, which then you jump up to 15 on race day and it can hit you. Like, especially if you're sensitive to the heat. So it might be worth, yeah, I'll probably be joining you on that trend, just like grind out the sauna sessions.
Let's do it. We've put in so much work. It's the last month that, you know, we need to get it right. And I think like there's been so much training on like heat training is trending. And a lot of, like, yeah. I saw Phil Sessemans run at Amsterdam, you know, absolute cracker running 207. And I see he's in the sauna quite often as well. So it's kind of like these guys are finding marginal gains. And it's, yeah. You know, seems to have helped them. On that point, there's a new shot that's come to the market, the Nomeo yeah. shot. And I put up an Instagram question sticker. People submitted questions. Mm-hmm. This one came up quite a lot. What is your thoughts on the Nomeo shot? So for those of you that don't know about it, it's basically a performance shot that delays your sort of your lactate levels kicking in. It's made up of, I think, 80% broccoli like extract, 15% lemon juice and 5% sugar or so. You've been having it, I've seen, you know, ahead of some of your key sessions.
Yeah.
You know, is that a key ingredient to training going forward? How have you found your body's reacted to that?
Yeah, so I know a lot of the guys using it, it's come from the sort of Norwegian, like Scandinavian area. So they're all doing the like lactic testing and checking that. Obviously, I'm the complete opposite, where there's none of the science. So I can't give specific numbers like, oh, it reduces my lactate by this much, whatever. But purely off feeling. I mean, recently my speed stuff has like massively improved. So it's hard to know. I mean, obviously I'm getting fitter. You can't tell exactly what it's down to, but I've been having before every session, like 3 hours before I take a shot. And it seems like almost, yeah, you get to a point where you're sort of redlining, but then you can keep it rolling through. So even though it's like you're hurting, a bit like a bicarb or something. Mm. And the guys actually from Nomeo were saying you can double it up. So I've been in some big races taking like a bicarb and Nomeo because they sort of hit the lactic in slightly different ways, I think, to reduce it. And so I can't see any negative, so I'm definitely going to keep, yeah, giving them a go. Have you tried it yet?
Especially if your stomach can handle it. Yeah, I've tried it once, and I must say it obviously makes your tummy a bit gassy, but I had an amazing session, so I'm kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's obviously some science behind it, but I also feel like, you know, once you've put that in your body 3 hours before, it's kind of like, you know, in 3 hours' time, you've got no excuse, yeah, yeah. It's business time. So I feel like, when you're fatigued and you want like a bit of mental, you know, inspiration and stuff, just by doing those things, it's kind of like, you know, it's business time and it just helps you mm-hmm. reach that level. I bet you if it's almost like subconsciously, obviously it must have a physical impact, but subconsciously, you know, you've taken it. So it's like, you got to perform yeah. type thing. On to another question. So you've made it very clear and, you know, in the running world, it's very, very obvious that there's a big doping issue in Kenya and, you know, some East African countries and stuff like that. It's almost like every week someone else gets busted and
yeah.
yeah, it's been hard to see over the last year or so. You've made it very clear how strongly you feel about it and so much so to the point that you actually, you know, won't even go to Kenya for a training yeah. camp or something like that. I am off to Kenya for a Best LX training camp in sort of like beginning of January for 2 weeks time. I'm excited to just embrace it and see what it's all about. And, you know, you've seen a lot of it. I'll document it all on YouTube.
Yeah.
I am a little bit scared that if I come out of there flying and, you know, ripping up PBs, I'm going to be like, did you sprinkle some EPOs, performance enhancing drugs on your eggs or, you know, what's going on? But do you still feel that strongly about it that you actually, you know, you won't go to Africa for that reason or to Kenya for that reason, should I say?
Yeah, like just for me personally, I've seen like so many people go over there. They've recommended it. Everyone that's gone Westerners, they've said they've seen nothing dodgy. Because I'm sure it's all kept under wraps. If you're not in there, you're not going to be exposed to it. And then, yeah, it's a great thing. But I just personally want nothing to do with it. I just think the culture, just with the doping every week, I think it's just killed the way you look at top sport now. I think most people that are in the know follow athletics closely. When you see a new world record go down or a crazy time, you're not looking at that as inspiration, I don't think anymore. Like, I think personally for me, I look at it as, oh, that's pretty sad, because I just don't see it as real. It's like, it's just so unbelievable. The fact that you see like some of these crazy records going down, they're putting 5 minutes into guys that have got busted before. It's like, how is that possible? And then, yeah, just all the top guys connected to the same sort of agents, like Italian Rosa, almost every single one of his athletes now, they're right at the top of the world. And it's like each week, oh, there's another one, he's gone. All right, when's the next guy popped? Yeah, see you later. So I just think it's killed the sport so much that I just want to stay completely clear of it personally.
Yeah, it's extremely sad. I think it's awful. And I mean, we can't justify it, but I suppose if you're Kenyan and you're coming 10th and you know you need to come third to support your family or something like that, I'm not saying it's justifiable, but you know, I think maybe that's why there's a lot of people like, you know, getting desperate and on it, but it shouldn't be that available. And if you change your mind, I'm going in January, so come join me for 2 weeks and we'll stay far away from the EPO and all that nonsense that goes on there. Okay, so another question. This relates to social media versus training. So you've obviously got a massive presence on YouTube. You pour your heart and soul into your weekly YouTube vlog. It's epic on a Sunday. I look forward to it. I see you've released it just before I got back, so I'll watch it a little bit later. Do you find that actually having that presence on YouTube and social media, it helps your training because, you know, it's motivational, it's keeping you accountable, you've got to deliver? Or do you find actually that because it's so time consuming, if you had to scrap that completely and just live a professional athlete life, you'd be able to reach higher heights?
Yeah, it's a good question. So like, technically, if you were to just completely scrap it, it frees up another like 10, 20 hours a week where I could maybe get some naps in, recover, rest, do all of that. So technically, yeah, it would be a burden off, but in the long run, I think mentally it would kill me because I'm not someone that can just live a professional lifestyle. I can't sit around for 4 hours in the day just doing nothing, watching TV. Like, it would kill me. So like in the long run. So I love actually being busy. I always find sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I could just chill, like sit down, watch a few episodes of Netflix or whatever. But then when occasionally I do actually have free time, then it's like I get bored so quickly. So I'm glad I've got the YouTube as like, something completely different, even though it's related to running still, it's like a different outlet that kind of keeps me occupied.
Nice. Yeah. And you know what? It helps a lot of people. It documents your journey so nicely. So keep it up. What's your favorite form of social media between sort of YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Strava? Which is your favorite form?
Oh, too easy. It's YouTube all the way. I need to step up my Instagram game, like the short form. It just doesn't excite me as much. I love the storytelling. So I'm like, you can't do that in a 1 minute video. You have to keep it so like, I guess with people's attention span, it's got to be bam, 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 cutthroat. But you just lose some of that, I don't know, personal connection. So all the people I'm interested in are YouTubers that you sit down, you watch a 20 minute video, you actually get to know their personality. I think it's so much easier to root for them than someone just putting out short reels or whatever.
Nice. Okay, so this is quite a common question that popped up in the Instagram like question sticker that I put up. Very high level. And I think this fascinates, you know, quite a few people because runners and injuries and niggles, like it happens. So when someone sees your ridiculous training, obviously you've trained up to that level, but someone doing a 28K week might be getting injured. And then they see someone doing a 280K week, not getting injured. And they're thinking like, how is this humanly possible? They're very fascinated about the strength work that you do, your S&C routine. Do you want to just touch base, you know, at very high level, apart from the big mileage, sort of some of the S&C that you get into?
Yeah, it's one of the most common questions I get as well, like comments on my channel. Can I do a full length video showing the full routine? And actually, so it's weirdly recently, it's flipped completely. So I used to do a lot, like maybe when I was on sort of 200 to 240K a week, I could fit in each day 2 hours, maybe an hour of that supplementary stuff. It was core, plyometrics, gym work, strengthening, all of that, okay? But then actually, so since getting to 280K and with the YouTube, I feel like I'm putting more and more work into each video. I've not touched a weight. I've not stretched. I do maybe once a week, I'll do a plyometrics, like 10 minutes of just bounding, bouncing, whatever. I'll do the foam rolling stuff. I'll eat every night, jump in the, you know, the compression boots. Because that's like I can be on my laptop while I'm in there for an hour. But to be honest, it's weirdly gone the other direction where I've almost cut all of that out and nothing's changed in terms of injuries, strength. Like if anything's gone the other way, I've had no niggles recently and I've got quicker. So I think when you get to the point where you're running so much, that is strength training in a way. Like it's hard to get there. It's sort of catch 22. It's like, how do you get to a point where you do big mileage? But then once you're there, it's like a cycle where you keep getting stronger by keep running more and therefore you don't get injured. So maybe it's just, yeah, I'm like a freak of, I don't know, like my body works differently, but that just seems to work for me somehow.
I think, you know what, you were good with your SNC before you hit the 280 cubic, so you probably built up the muscles that you need to in order to sustain that. And now, because you're putting so much load through your body, it's kind of like strength training in disguise, especially with the heel work you do. Some of those brutal, you know, long incline runs you're doing. I mean, you're putting so much load through your body, probably a lot more load than you would with just a normal SNC. But yeah, at some point, definitely look to make that video. I'm sure it'll, you know... A lot of runners will look into it. Okay, I know you've got a race tomorrow, so I'm not going to keep you very long. It's night time in Tokyo. My little ones are running wild here as well, so I'll go. But I just wanted to find out from the viewers and drop your comments in the a comment below. Jake's coming to the UK in December time. I know he's got a race the week after Valencia Marathon, obviously. You know, recovering with a full set. But the week after that, or a couple of weeks after that, we said we might go to Battersea Park Run. It would be rude not to. And I thought it might be a good idea, like maybe, you know, if Jake full sends it and I'm trying to keep up with him for as long as possible, or if he tries to pace me to a PB, which would be, you know, 14:30-ish or so. If you're up for that, which you seem keen, let us know what you want to see in the comments and we'll make it happen. But yeah, Jake, really good to catch up. Good luck with the rest of your training. I don't know if there's anything you want to mention, you know, before going.
Nah, it seems perfect. Yeah, definitely post Valencia. I'm like, that's the one thing in Japan, it's hard to get the shorter distance races. They've got every week a top quality half marathon, marathon, but I want to get, I'd fancy ripping a little 5K. I've got, 10K actually. I've just entered Telford 10K. That's a week after Valencia. We'll see. I probably will still be crippled from Valencia, but I couldn't resist. And then, we should... definitely hit up Battersea, hit a full seven park run, see what can happen there. I'm looking forward to getting home. Some nice, cool, icy weather over Christmas. And cheers for having me on the pod. Let's give it big runs at Valencia.
Yeah, so good to catch up. Cheers for keeping on delivering. Honestly, it's so motivational. And, you know, it gets me out the door often when I'm kind of like, Nick, don't be soft. If there's another human doing this, you know, you can do it like a portion of it as well. Just on that note, in Battersea, there's a few like 5K, 5 mile... races in December, and some of them are absolutely stacked, so look out for those. It'll be icy cool and it'll be nice and quick. And then I know from my point of view, obviously Valencia is the main goal, and then after that Tokyo Marathon is the main goal, which is your side of the world. I've heard such amazing things, but if you could just sprinkle some snowflakes and, you know, make it an abnormally cold day, then I promise to come and deliver a PB. Okay.
Yeah, that's the gamble you've got here. Hopefully we get a cold one, but nah, that'll be quality. Yeah, coming over for Tokyo. Have you been to Japan before? Would that be the first time?
I've heard such amazing things, seen such amazing things. So yeah, I'm there for a week over Tokyo Marathon. I'm excited for it.
Quality. Oh, nice. We can catch up. Yeah, Valencia, Battersea, Tokyo. Plenty of crossover there.
I know the Tokyo is so hard to get into, and they've got 25 international semi-elite entries, which is what they call. So I submitted my 2:19:45. I was probably like, it's probably not quick enough. And they got back to me. And I was like, how can I not take this opportunity? So yeah, I'm pumped for it.
Awesome. Oh, good stuff, man. No, thanks for having me on. And yeah, we'll catch up soon.
Good to catch up, and I'll see you in Valencia. Good luck with your race coming up.
Awesome. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, champ. Bye-bye.